Well, good evening, everyone. It's good to be together for Christmas Eve. This is a preacher's dream tonight because you have nowhere to go tonight. We're not hosting a second service, and so I can preach as long as I want. Our media people, though, did warn me that, just remember, people are at home on the live stream, and at any time, if you go too long, they can just exit the screen and do what they want to do. So there's that. I'd like for us to read tonight a portion of Isaiah 9. This is probably one of the most well-known prophecies about the birth of Jesus, and these words come from Isaiah 9, 2-7. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. I want to begin this evening by sharing a story about a historian who goes to a Christmas Eve service for the first time. He is a well-known historian. He's bright, established in his career, and he's also known for being critical of the Christian faith. But his family, of course, they love Christmas Eve, and they convince him to attend with them. So there they sit in the Christmas Eve service, his first time, listening to the carols, listening to the message, listening to the whole experience of a Christmas Eve service with a candlelight. Afterwards, he feels compelled to find the priest and ask or talk with him about his experience. So he sees the priest and he says to him, "I've finally figured out why people love Christmas services." The priest looks at him and says, "Well, what is it?" He says, "A baby threatens no one. So in the end, it's just a happy event with no real meaning at all." Well, the priest, as you can imagine, was discouraged by hearing this. After sitting through a whole service on the birth of Jesus, this historian concluded that it really is just a cute story about a baby with no historical significance. Now, of the many things that can be said about Jesus' birth, what cannot be said are that it is insignificant and non-threatening. As we've said throughout our Advent series, that even before Jesus could walk or talk, he was a homeless refugee with a price on his head by people in power who saw him first as a person of significance and second, a person who threatened them. When the gospel writers put their ink to the scroll, they did not see themselves as writing just another story to read at a bedtime for kids. If anything, they saw themselves more like people writing treasonous tracts about a coming king who was a person of significance and a threat to people who lived in corrupt power. And no doubt, these gospel writers knew exactly what Isaiah 9 was saying about a coming king, and they saw Jesus exactly fulfilling these words. And it's hard to overstate what Isaiah says about Jesus in Isaiah 9. "For to us a child is born, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." But he starts this prophecy with why this Prince of Peace came. He starts with darkness. He writes, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, the light has dawned." Darkness. That's one of those deep textured words to describe the way the world isn't how it's supposed to be. And if it were a different year, I'd probably belabor this point, but it's 2020. And you don't need to be told, I think, how the world is not the way it's supposed to be. Tell me I'm wrong. I do think, though, we need to be told over and over and over again where the light is to be found, where we look to see past the darkness. And I want to say, number one, the light is not ourselves, nor is it a technological development, nor is it, dare I say, a vaccine. Now, don't get me wrong. I am excited about this COVID vaccine. I'm excited by the way the global community has come together in such short order to provide a vaccine for COVID-19. But let's remember that this vaccine is for one thing only, COVID-19. This vaccine will not solve corruption. It won't solve violence. It won't stop wars. It won't find homes for homeless people. It won't stop the 26 million people who are refugees because of war and oppression. It won't heal your marriage. It won't repair your relationship with your estranged son or daughter. It won't pull you out of addiction. That darkness needs a different light. I recently heard of a story about Bob Dylan, who a number of years ago was actually putting on a benefit concert along with many other top musicians to raise money and awareness for a different virus, that of AIDS. And at one point in this massive concert, all the musicians stormed the stage, they grabbed microphones, and they sang a sort of anthem together as a way of riling up the crowds. And the anthem was, "We are the children of the world, the ones who make a brighter day, so let's start giving." As they were singing that song, Bob Dylan looked visibly out of place. He looked uncomfortable, so much so that the next day during a press conference, people asked him, "Why did you look so uncomfortable while singing this incredible song?" And Bob Dylan, with honesty and almost as a confession, said, "Well, humanity just can't save itself." He disagreed that we are the ones who make a brighter day. And Isaiah has good news for Bob Dylan. Isaiah describes to those living in the land of deep darkness, there's this rising sun, there's this bright light coming over this world in darkness. And what is that bright light that radiates and brings beauty and pushes back the darkness? It's a baby. The solution that's going to solve the darkness that covers this world is a child. A child born to a teenage girl in the middle of nowhere with no power, privilege, or status. Welcome to the upside-down kingdom of God. And about this child, Isaiah prophesies that he will be a wonderful counselor, a mighty God, an everlasting father, a prince of peace. And one person who studied Isaiah says, it's interesting that these are the four things that describe the child, because in the Old Testament, they are exclusively used to describe God. And no other religious literature speaks of a child in these ways. In many ways, it's considered heretical, but here in the scriptures, it describes Jesus because he is God. Not just a messenger, not just a representation, the fullness of deity and the fullness of humanity. As Bob Dylan himself said, humanity cannot save itself. As Jesus grows up and steps into the spotlight of public ministry, he reveals exactly what Isaiah is talking about. He reveals that he is the wonderful counselor. His words are truth. He speaks with authority. He reveals the way the world is supposed to be, the way our lives are supposed to be. He gives wisdom. Our youth right now, in their year together, are studying the Sermon on the Mount, which is Jesus' own teaching on relationships, on marriage, on money, on the way we speak, on how to forgive. The very Jesus who was there at the beginning when our world came into being, when humanity was formed, speaking truth and wisdom and life. But how it's to be lived to the fullest. He is the wonderful counselor. As he steps into ministry, he reveals that he is also the mighty God. As he heals the sick, as he calms the storm, as he forgives sinners, he does things that only God can do, revealing that he's not just a messenger, not just another human, but he is God in the flesh, and he has all the power that God has. Jesus reveals that he is the everlasting Father. He extends incredible compassion on the least of these. He dines with people who don't think they belong in good company. He shows grace and favor to the margins and the outsiders in society. He embodies the loving Father's heart. And finally, Jesus is the Prince of Peace. And when Isaiah describes Jesus, we should see this, as the Prince of Peace, the kind of peace he's talking about is far more than a sense of inner tranquility or even mindfulness. It's peace in the fullest, widest possible sense. Peace for Isaiah is the harmony of the world it's supposed to be. It's the absence of darkness in every corner of our lives and in our world. Peace is relational, it's spiritual, it's mental health, it's economic, it's justice, every piece of the world, peace. And it's important to know that when God sends Jesus, and God does send Jesus, he existed before the incarnation for all of eternity with the Trinity. And when God sends Jesus, he didn't send him just to create a new relationship for us with the Father. Beautiful though that is, he sent Jesus to establish a kingdom of peace, pushing back the darkness in every corner of our world. He's not interested in just establishing a relationship with us and leaving these pieces of darkness undealt with. This kingdom of peace is a worldwide kingdom, and the effects of Jesus' work go to every corner of darkness, both in your personal life and throughout the world. I love how Isaiah concludes right after saying these four things about the identity of this coming king. He says, of the increase of his government and his peace, there will be no end. That is to say, as Jesus' rule, as his governance is extended, so too will his peace extend. As he rules, it is inevitable that there will be harmony and shalom coming into the world and peace being experienced. And that can be understood, I think, in two ways. Number one, of course that is the case for when Jesus, our Advent hope, returns. When he comes and judges evil and eradicates sin and its power, we will experience in its fullness that kingdom of peace. But it's also true that even now, in this very day, as we turn our hearts to Christ and follow him and walk in his ways, we experience that peace. We taste that peace. We experience our own lives coming back into alignment with the way they were created to be lived. And I've said this before, and I say it many times, that so many people, even people I know, who come to faith in Jesus, do not do it because of one argument or one particular teaching. They often do it as they experience the kingdom of peace. They experience that shalom of which Jesus speaks of, the life that he speaks of, actually coming into their own life, the friendships, the finances, their sexuality, their marriage, their leisure life. And they see that the Jesus who promises peace delivers as they place their faith and trust in him. But the question I want to finish with is the how. How does Jesus establish this kingdom of peace? How does it become reality in our world? So many people throughout history have said, I will bring a kingdom of peace. Even in the first century, when Rome was in its height, the emperor claimed such grand things, it was called a kingdom of peace. But it came by violence, by warfare, by soldiers' boots marching down the street, by punishing the outsiders, enslaving the foreigners, and building a kingdom on power. This is how Paul in Colossians 1 describes the way in which Jesus' kingdom of peace becomes our reality. He writes, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him," and him is Jesus, "and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth and things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." The mighty God, the Prince of Peace, the everlasting Father described in Isaiah 9 shifts in tone when we get further in Isaiah. In fact, in Isaiah 53, we see that the Prince of Peace is now the suffering servant. We see that the mighty God is now the slain lamb. And we see that he's wounded, he's crushed, and he's pierced. Wounded for our iniquities, crushed for our transgressions, pierced for our sins. And all of this, of course, looking forward already then to the event of the death and the resurrection of Jesus, where he himself takes on himself our sin, our transgressions, the darkness we don't only choose to create but perpetuate in our broken world. Jesus takes that on himself and brings it to the grave, breaking the power of sin over his world and over us. And then rising victorious from the grave to sit at the throne of the Father as the everlasting Prince of Peace. And the day of the resurrection of Jesus was the first day where that peace begins to spread. And as people turn their hearts to him and they follow him, they discover exactly what he promised. Life. Shalom. The reordering of desires as God intended from the beginning. The kingdom of peace has come. And as we've said throughout Advent, it's coming. The resurrection seals its future. I want to finish with what Jesus says in his own ministry. He happens to be doing ministry during the Festival of Light in Jerusalem. There would have been torches everywhere and people celebrating everywhere. And in that event, knowing full well what it meant, Jesus makes this potent statement where he stands up and he probably yelled at the top of his lungs just to be heard, "I am the light of the world. Whoever believes in me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life."